Coming up, find out how to lead through change with some important tips I think a lot of people overlook. The importance of journaling. We can get deep onto this one, and how to automate your good habits. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Weekly. Brought to you by today's determined attackers easily bypass even the most advanced network defenses. Trying to ramp up staff to detect their backdoors can cost thousands of dollars and take months, even years. With Active Countermeasures AI Hunter, we enable junior analysts to detect even the most advanced backdoors in a matter of hours. Sign up for a demo and purchase our product today by visiting activecountermeasures.com/BSW. Active Countermeasures, make every analyst a hunter. Rapid7 powers the practice of SecOps. Using shared data, analytics, and automated workflows, SecOps unites IT, DevOps, and security teams to make security an outcome of innovation. Rapid7 combines technology, expertise, and advocacy to drive vulnerability management, application security, incident detection, and log management for more than 7,000 organizations worldwide. Power up your SecOps practice with a free trial at rapid7.com/securityweekly. Do you have a website, an external presence, employees, an office? Any of these things can be compromised and attacked. How are you defending your assets? Have you penetration tested your public assets? Start 2018 by taking a proactive approach to securing your vulnerable areas. Black Hills Information Security has been helping companies find their weaknesses since 2008. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com and see how they can help you sleep better at night.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Business Security Weekly. We made it to episode 102. We're recording this on Monday, October 15th, 2018. I am Michael Santarcangelo, your straight-talking guide to elevated performance and accelerated results. And joining me from G-Unit Studios, fresh from his win last night, your friend of mine, Paul Asadorian.
Hey, Paul. Thank you, Michael. I just have an announcement that I would appreciate if everyone would stop clowning around.
Knock it off now, right? Is this the Dave Kennedy special that you're putting on there?
No, I was just, I love Halloween, so I just, you know, everyone's like, is that your costume? I'm like, no, it's just like an extra mask that I bought just for this year to clown around, just, basically.
Just in case. Just, yeah, for where it fit. It's funny.
There you go. What's going on, Michael? It's good to have you on the show.
Do the it's show good together. To see you. It's yeah. It's, you know, we get back into the groove, and then, well, we had a good conversation, a couple weeks ago, Jason. So, all right, we're getting back into the group.
That's
we're
it.
Figuring out.
That's it.
It's a busy summer.
Yes, it's been very busy lately. All good stuff going on this front. You know, life gets in the way. Life got in the way big time with you, Michael. Life has a tendency to get in the way sometimes, and that happens. But you know, we press on, and things are going well. We got a lot of great stories to talk about today.
Yeah, well, and as we get into those stories too, just a comment, because thinking about that, because life happens. I mean, it's the summer was certainly interesting for me on a lot of levels, and it was great because we got to involve the kids in it. But let's go back to it, right? Because you and I also run businesses, and one of the things that I've learned in over the last 5 years or so is that life is going to get in the way. Yeah. And you can design your business to be able to sustain that, or you can get caught off guard. And at times in the past, I'd been caught off guard. And one of the things I've been really diligent. So, you know, when we go through these stories, you know, and a lot of you that are listening or watching, you do write in and you do send links and you do want to discuss them. And that's great because, as you'll see, I take this stuff pretty seriously. I'm trying to select the things that are either guiding me to do better or that I'm seeing with my clients. In fact, today's going to be a lot of stuff we're seeing with the clients. One of the things I figured out last week, Paul, is that there's a difference between transactional and transformational. And a lot of times, if you find yourself in an organization where you're saying, well, our procurement folks, they really want to see a list of deliverables. Oh, and how long will that take? And how much does that cost? And trying to calculate hourly rates and stuff, that's more transactional work. Mm-hmm. And then the transitional work, or the transformational work rather, that's where you're really looking at, okay, but I have friction creeping in, but I'm trying to lead change in this organization, but I'm trying to be better. What do I do? That stuff's a lot more nuanced. It takes a lot more of a different approach. And the big lesson I learned last week is you can do both. In fact, you can use transactional things as building blocks to get to your transformative states. And so that's really helped me with the business perspective. But what I'll say is I thought in July, two things. I thought I needed a break. I was just at the brink and, you know, getting those warning signs that it was really time to back off. And of course, that's when everything kicked into high gear, and I have not had a chance yet. And I'm okay. And the other thing I figured out, I thought I had about maybe 3 to 4 days of margin. As in other words, I could maybe miss up to a week and then I'd be pretty much screwed. And 8 weeks later, I could finally get back into the routine of things. And no, like we've done okay. So a lot of the things that we talk about, a lot of things we look at this, even if you're not running your own business, they'll still apply. This is how you build a better team. This is how you have that tolerance that you can take care of yourself as a leader. You can take care of the people around you. Your team continues to do good stuff. And that's what we'll dive in today. Why don't we start at the top? So there's a guy, James Clear. I'm pretty sure we've talked about his stuff before. He's got a new book out. I am not one of the people who got to read the early copy of the book. And I am, right? We talked, Paul, about the book club. Right now, I have 3 books going this week, plus a fiction book. And the plan is to get at least 2 of those books to completion during what I call like the fast read phase. What's happened to me in the past is I'll start a book and then the ideas get going and going and going. But then this other book looks interesting and I start that and the ideas get going. So I have a new discipline where I push myself to just read the book. And of course, if I don't like it, I'll jettison it. It'll go. But if I'm digging it, if I'm liking it, oh, all right, I'll keep reading it. And then I'll mark it for go back and read again next time, you know, when you have notes. And so that's what I'm trying to step out the books. So I'm always putting something new into the hopper. I'm trying to get something finished and then I can go back and start reading stuff more slowly. And one of the first books I'm going to read more slowly is actually Never Split the Difference. That and or Brain Audit, still 2 of my top favorites. I know you've been reading Extreme Ownership. That's great. Atomic Habits looks good. And so James Clear put out an excerpt from, I believe it was chapter 14. And he said, look, you know, the habits, he talks a lot about small habits. Like, so atomic, both in the way that it creates a difference, right? Atomic energy, but also atomic in the fact that it's the size of a particle. And these small changes, these incremental things you can do to get better, help you get better. And as we lead into that, just again, to reflect, if I look back over my last year, I started time, right? We've talked about this, right? We did the time audits. Well, I did one. I started time blocking. I started prioritizing things. I started looking at how I assigned work to myself during the week. I started working with my clients to solve a lot of these issues and then bring some of that stuff back into my own practice. And I can tell you, these little simple changes definitely add up. You know, it's instead of trying to get it all right, these little mantras, did I do better today? In fact, that's really one of the only questions I ask myself. We'll get to that with journaling, but you know, did I do better today? So James Clear talks about the fact that one of the things that's easier is if you're going to automate your habits, automate the desired behavior, make it easier to do the right thing, right? We'll say the right thing, as opposed to the bad habit. And the way that you break a bad habit, you make it impossible. So what's underlying it is structural change. Change the processes. And by the way, this has worked for security for years. I used to call it the water principle. Water will flow through the path of least resistance. So if you want someone to take what you believe to be a more secure action, make that the easier action to take than the action you don't want them to take. Now, lots of reasons why that does and doesn't work. But if we're talking about ourselves right now and automating habits and trying to get better with something, change it. Change the process. And so he gives some examples around these things too, which is great because it's not always technology, right? It's little things like park further away so you walk. Take the stairs so you don't take the elevator. If you want to eat less, switch out your plates and have smaller plates. Take the television out of your room. One of the big things I did, there are on my iPad and iPhone, I have the only game I have left is Solitaire. On my iPhone, all the games are off. All the social media. I saved a little bit of Twitter online, and during I'm off Facebook now. Like I've made all those changes. Yeah, huge difference. And so there are little things, right? You change your technology, you change your structure, you change where something's located, you change the process, and then you can do it. And that starts to matter because that lets you do more stuff later. Like automatically now, I reflexively, I get up, I journal. I've got a couple other pieces of my morning routine. It's taken me a couple weeks, months almost to start building it. And I'm not yet thrilled with how it is, but I'll tell you what, frees up so much other time to go work on some of these other things that now I've increased my reading. Well, I got into the habit of reading every day. Now I'm reading more every day. Now I'm watching less TV and reading more. Now I'm reading 2 or 3 books concurrently. Now I'm starting to look at how I'm reading those books, right? So it's little steps, little things you can do here and there. I thought it was a good read. And his only warning was, if you automate too much, or automation, so we've all fallen prey to this. Sit down with Netflix, you sit down with Amazon Prime, you watch one episode, then it automatically serves up the next episode, then the next episode, and 3 or 4 hours later, you're like, what the hell happened to my night? It's gone. So that's the risk.
Yeah, I think for me, Michael, you know, I need to make some of those changes, although I struggle with the, you know, taking social media apps off my phone, because it's a large part of, you know, the mission here at Security Weekly is to be responsive on social media and make posts.
Sure.
I think there's a balance there too. You know, I have Flipboard on my phone, which is great for reading a lot of articles that I flag for the various shows, and I really like that. HubSpot has been instrumental in structuring a lot of my tasks. So, you know, you kind of mentioned technology before. I've never had a tool set that can keep me on task like HubSpot does. And it's just one thing that I really latched onto was every day I now set aside at least a half an hour to go through all of my follow-ups and things I have to do in HubSpot. And it makes it so easy, Michael. I don't know there's ever been anything that keeps me on point like HubSpot does. It also has an app so I can review activities that are happening there. The app is not so great. It doesn't allow me to create as much as just receive information, which,
yep,
you know, on the weekends gets kind of boring as most people aren't responding to stuff on the weekends. But I do find that some of those changes definitely help you build a lot better habits.
No, and that's a great point too, right? So it's you're setting aside that time and you're looking at, okay, how do I use this technology to work for me in a way that works? And that's a perfect example. That's great. I like that a lot. All right. Well, so let's lead into this next one. Don't just tell employees organizational changes are coming. Explain why. Yes, yes, yes. You know, I told you, I kind of see like this difference of being transactional. In fact, it's interesting, right? A lot of people talk about communication, and a lot of people have known me from communication and over the last number of years, doing more leadership stuff. And I admit I did it begrudgingly, and I'm not sure yet whether I should have or shouldn't have done it begrudgingly or not, but I've now put a lot of time and effort into looking at communication and leadership. Here's the reality. Most of us admitting, right, getting help on it, like long-term help, that's a sign of maturity, but it's also still uncomfortable for a lot of people to suggest, well, maybe I'm not as good as I'd like to be. But I got looking at it deeper, right? Because, I like to ask, what problem are we trying to solve? And I started looking at it from a marketing perspective, like really trying to take a look at the clients that are bringing me in, the enterprise clients and the vendor clients, like what's the problem that they're trying to solve? And what's fascinating is a lot of them would start out by saying something along the lines of, well, it's communication, or I need help with leadership, or my team needs help with leadership. And Paul, it's really largely been not those issues. There's a lot of other structural stuff that we need to take care of first. And then yes, that will facilitate better communication, or yes, that will ease the process of leading ourselves through this change. But the big thing I figured out is that on that transactional side, you can use me to help solve things and work into issues. And so what I mean by when I say transactional, what I mean is, like, for example, we've got this thing I developed called the context of security. And if it makes sense, we'll talk about it. But Paul, it's a way to help security understand its purpose and how it operates and where it fits, and then to better explain that to the rest of the organization. So it's a way of thinking and organizing your team. Okay, well, I can tell you the steps that are involved in that, right? We've talked over the summer, the vendor value prop, and then my summer delay that as that gets together, right? That's more transactional, because I know that there's 5 steps that we're going to follow that are going to get us to that place that you want to be. I can tell you roughly how long it takes. I can show you what it looks like. Boom, full stop. We're good. The transformative side means we're change. It's change. It's we're leading change. And when we're leading change, we've got to think about the whole process of change and what it means. And so this article, this hits it on all the cylinders. And frankly, if you're in security today, you're probably tasked with leading change, or you're involved in the process of change. I don't see it to be any other way. I mean, think about it, right, Paul? Since you and I started doing security 20 years ago, it was we took care of computers and swapped out backup tapes and you know, did stuff that nobody knew about or understood and kind of like stayed out of the way. And now it's a topic of discussion in every executive and boardroom. Mm. Necessarily, security's changed and it's driving change in a lot of organizations. Now, here's the other thing, right? Change is the new normal. Constant change. In fact, right? What is it they always say? The only thing constant is change? Sure. Mm-hmm. But it's constant change now is our new normal. Things are always changing. And here's the real challenge. Most people don't know why they're changing. sure. We'll know that things change, and we'll either pretend that we're good at adapting to change or that we're not good at it, whatever. But ask most people why. Why are we changing? And their common answer is, I don't know. In fact, like most, a third to a half of people don't know why something's changing. They only know that it's changing. And the problem with that is that builds up that friction. So when we start talking about change, and this is, again, where I tend to focus a lot of my work right now. So you've come in, if I'm going to change the way somebody's doing their job, if I'm going to change the technology, if I'm going to change the way we're talking about something, that's often creating friction. That friction means that, and think about, run down this list. I'm going to stop trusting people around me. Things are going to start slowing down. The projects, especially projects labeled change projects, will fail. And then anything else I try to do, well, now people are burned out. They don't want to show up at meetings. Everything takes longer. It's more complicated. It's more expensive. And that's exactly what this article addresses. And it starts out by saying, did you tell people where you're going? Right? I like to call this paint a picture of a better tomorrow. They called it cast a better vision statement. Here's the challenge with vision statements, even though everything in this article I agree with. Vision statements tend to be like 5-year, 10-year projections. What do you see? How will the world be different as a result of whatever you're doing? Paint me a picture of a better tomorrow. Visually tell me what literally tomorrow is going to look like. More figuratively, give me next month, next 90 days, but not much further than like a year. Like that's your outer bounds to it. Then start communicating with people. And this whole, I get so upset when I see everybody say, well, the mark is over communication. Wrong. Just wrong. If you are communicating in a way that's creating friction and you over communicate, then you're going to have a lot more problems. What people are trying to say there is communicate and listen, be accessible, do more of it than you think you need to. Don't assume that you're communicating as much as people need you to, especially when you're changing. But here's the part I'd add to it. Explain the rationale behind things and give people a chance to make sense of it on their own terms. They might not agree with it.
Yeah.
Right away.
Sometimes the hems are going to be hems no matter what, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. Typically, and that's a reference that, for those who may not have read the book, Who Moved My Cheese, right? It's one of the personas in that book. And I think it's that book that gives example, like in some cases, like people just aren't going to change. And unfortunately, usually those are the people that get let go of the organization because they can't let go of the past and the way they've done things and accept change and move on. Now, a great example of explaining why is in extreme ownership, right? And I think it's a story he told about the CEO that, you know, wanted to change the concepts in their sales team, right? And all she had to do was go present on why. And then they were like, oh, okay, that may. And I've actually been using that strategy with my kids, Michael. And
yep.
It's a lot better. I mean, it doesn't work 100% of the time because kids are kids, right? And you have to accept that. But explaining why, I think, really helps bring people on board. And I agree, you can't over-explain it and disseminate too much information and confuse people. You got to give simple explanations as to why. And often this time, you pile all your kids in the car, right? And they're like, where are we going? And they're like, well, we're going here. And, you know, there's lots of complaining that ensues. But if you give them a plan and you explain why and you put some rewards in there too, like, hey, if you're good, we can stop at McDonald's, right? that tends to be a lot more effective.
Yeah, no, you're not inaccurate. In fact, a lot of the stuff I test out, it also works at the family setting. And it's not because, see, I always get leery when we say, well, I mean, it works if you're teaching kids. You should just treat the people around you like it. No, it's actually more of fundamentally the way that our brains process information is that we need to put some sort of a context to it, right? That's why I call it the context of security. So if we're going to start leading change, then you're exactly right, Paul. Talk to people about what's going on and then listen to them. Because I find even my kids, they'll be, well, Dad, what about X?
Yep.
Oh. Yep, that's a good idea. We should do it that way, right? It's. I don't always say to them with an iron fist, here's how it's going to be, but I'll certainly lay out, guys, this is our current, right? Here's our current situation.
Right.
Here's our better tomorrow. Here's what we're trying to get accomplished. Here's the role I see each of you taking. Who's got questions, right? And then I listen to the questions, and sometimes they bring up good stuff, and sometimes, you know, it's that complaining or that I don't want to change, but I like it the way it is. It's the same thing when you're working in an enterprise or in any organization where there's change. People are curious why. And if you just give them that chance, and then to your point, some people, they're just not going to like it regardless.
Yep.
Some people aren't going to like it till they see it, but they're willing to try it. And some people, they get it right away and they're like, yeah, right on. Let's do it. Let's get after it. And I think that's kind of the thing, right? Just make sure that you're clarifying these things as you do it. Anyway, this is one of those.
It's always my oldest son too. that is very quick to point out any flaw in the plan. He has amazing troubleshooting skills. He's the first one to be like, yeah, but Dad, what about that? Like, that's not going to work. I'm like, damn it. He's right. Yeah, but all the time.
You're right, though. Those are good things to build, good skill to right? have. Yeah. And learn and learn on how to do that. And so that works out well. I try now when we do these to limit the Harvard Business Review articles to one, because those of you on the free subscription, I think you get 3 per month or 5 if you sign up.
Sure.
So so I try to meter these out. So that's our one. I put one in. It's pretty fast. It's called Stop Hating the People You Serve. It's Dan Rockwell on the Leadership Freak blog. This is great. Basically, the reason I put this in here was every now and then we detect these currents in our industry. And his point is all industries where we get fed up. We're tired ourselves. We didn't get as much sleep. We're not eating as well. Things are stressful. Something happens. And we start really getting upset with the people around us, right? Those jerks. Why don't they see? They don't understand. Why can't they just do what I told them to do? This would all be easier. And by the way, as I've always pointed out, everybody else in the organization is more or less feeling the same way. And so all he did was he kind of took a look at it here. And in fact, I think it was a neat twist. The way he wrote it out was he took what he thought were the signs of love and then inverted it and said, here, if you're not doing these things, this is a sign that you're leading with hate. And that, you know, and so you're minimizing, you're ignoring your impact on others. Right? We just talked about that with security and for change. You won't let go of small issues or faults or offenses. You're withholding help if you can make it easier for others to get their work done. You know, it's stuff like that. And then he said, but here's the thing. You want to do that? Like, you want to invert it? Stop. Don't blame the other people. But control what you can control. So those of you who are reading some of the Stoic stuff, and those are definitely in some of the rotation for me. And what I'm noticing is, like, so if you look at the stuff that Jocko Willink's done in Extreme Ownership, the Dichotomy of Leadership just came out, and then he's got a bunch of books for the kids, and my kids are tearing those books up. They're absolutely loving them. And he's got the podcast for people to listen to. And then he's got a podcast for kids to listen to, right? And they're going after those types of things.
And Dan Wheatley sent me an interview that Jocko did on the Tim Ferriss show.
Yep.
I started listening to that. It's pretty good.
That's kind of how he got his start in the podcasting. He's been on Joe Rogan a couple times.
Yeah.
And lately he's been making the rounds with a lot of other folks.
It's a good strategy
as well.
Right? I'm starting my own podcast, so let me go on the most popular podcast in the world to promote my podcast. He's a smart dude.
So if Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan say to you, hey, you should start a podcast, Jocko says, hey, all right, yeah, I'll start a podcast. And it's been well. I enjoyed listening to him. So his point, though, with all of this, and what's happening is if you start looking at a lot of these folks, and then my study of the Stoics, as much as I've been able to do it, a lot of parallels. I can't control the people. I can control me. I can control how I act. Yeah. I control how I react. I can create space between when something happens or doesn't, and I can lead from within that. And what I like is about using loving leadership. Again, it fits with the personal theme. I realized over the summer, in the midst of everything going on in my life, that there was a lot to be happy about. There's a lot to lead with love. And I started paying attention to how negative the world had become in so many places. I think I've talked about this before, but I've maintained I'm on a media fast. And does it mean I don't know the headlines? No, I still live. I still travel. I mean, you know, things are going to permeate through. I pay attention to the industry, but I'm not watching the news. I don't have news apps. I'm not obsessively consuming any of that stuff anymore. And it's kind of fascinating how that really has let me move from a place to say, hey, you're doing a good job, and to smile at people and to listen to their stories and to elevate them and to meet people with love and to lead with love.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important, especially in security today.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Goodness,
we're supposed to make people feel better and to feel safe. And well, while we're doing,
and I feel like both in the media and in security, right, that peevishness is a central theme there, right? Like, if you go on social media, a lot of what you find is people complaining about every single little thing, right? If you take that into your leadership, man, are you going to have a tough time, in my opinion, right? And so, you know, us here at Security Weekly, we kind of joke like that. I know mostly like what's going on, and I'm not going to complain about every little thing. I'm going to go to the things that are important, right? And I'm not going to, you know, nitpick on every little tiny thing, because you just got to accept some things and focus on what's important and what contributes to the mission. And, you know, let a lot of those other things go. I think that's also great relationship advice too, right?
Especially
when you've been married to the same person for a long time, there's going to be a lot of peeves, and you know, we have frequent conversations about, like, you know, I think I can probably let that go. Like, we'll point it out, but, you know, in the future, we'll let that shit go. Right.
Yeah. And not bring it up every year, every year, every year, every year.
Right.
Yeah, same thing, right? Bring it back to the enterprise. Well, this one time, 5 years ago, this meeting, this jerk sabotaged. Yeah, stop. Let it go. Let it go.
Yeah.
I'll leave you this one part because this has been really fascinating for me. So this is the 7 ways to move toward loving leadership that Dan put out. Number 6, celebrate imperfect progress. You're a hater if nothing is ever good enough. And that's kind of like what you were just saying. But I found for me, look inward on that. Mm-hmm. A lot of us are driven, you know, call it whatever you want. You're type A, you're perfectionist. For me, it's always been about pursuit of learning. In fact, I've got some neat insights on that over the summer. But I'm struggling to just say, oh, it's better. Cool. Right? It doesn't have to be perfect. Did you do better? Did you learn something? Are you right. better for you? Good. But then we can extend that to other people. If we expect him to do it as well as we do or to know what we know, we might be a little bit disappointed.
A lot of us know that the road to success is pretty bumpy, right? And you got to be willing to accept the flat tires and, the bumps along the way to get where you're going. And you're going to learn a lot from your failures more so than your successes, I think is a great lesson, right?
And in fact, I'm going to use that as a segue because when you talk about that, Paul, so what's interesting is a lot of times people say, well, you learn more from your failures than your successes, as you just said. And I think it's true. A lot of people say, well, you learn from the experience. Well, possibly true. I don't know if I ever shared this with you. I developed a model a number of years ago called the information interaction model. I was just trying to understand how we actually process information. And the key to it was reflection. And what's interesting is there's some science I was picking up last week. I haven't read it completely, but the gist of it was learning actually comes from reflection. And one of the books I'm reading right now, and I'm enjoying it, so it might go for a slow read, is The Talent Code, mm-hmm. and looking at how we learn new things and how we learn new skills. And I'm only halfway through it, but so far really enjoying it. So one of the things I do with this is this journaling. So I'll use that as a segue. Journaling, right? The reflection. Journaling can boost your leadership skills. I can tell you definitively, yes. I'll tell you straight, if you do it consistently, it'll change your life. Here's why. There's a quote. I'm just going to have to paraphrase it. I can't remember anymore who it's attributed to. There's probably several people, but it's something along the lines of how do I know what I think until I sit down to write? And if you've ever done this, you know, you call it free writing, call it morning pages, call it journaling. You sit down and you just start writing on something. And then all of a sudden your brain goes in this direction and then this direction and then this direction. Not good for putting up on a blog post, but really good for exploring. And in fact, what I found is that writing for journaling for me improves my writing everywhere, improves my speaking, improves my thinking. But writing for journaling is writing for journaling. It's not writing. I write very conversationally for myself and to myself. And it's fascinating though, because Paul, some of it's really cogent and clear, and you're like, "How did I do that?"
Yeah.
And other times you're like, "What a pile of wow! Those are just some words there." Here's the thing though, when you start doing it and you do it consistently, it changes the way that you see things. It changes the way that you pay attention to things. Now, I've picked up a practice outlined by the Stoics of journaling twice a day. I journal at the top of my day, about 10 minutes long. And I'm specifically setting an intention for my day. And what I find is sometimes it's really short, Paul. Like, hey, today I need to get X done and I want to do this. Sometimes it's a little longer in that I start looking at, I want to be more mindful of what I eat today, or I want to make sure that I'm doing X, Y, and Z today.
Also, I like that first in the morning, Michael, because typically at night, you know, whether late at night or maybe you're dreaming or something, right? You have thoughts and like whatever was kind of burning on your brain. To get that down on paper first thing in the morning, I like that. I'm not there yet, but I like it as a goal for myself. Yeah.
You just captured the other part. Sometimes I'll write these huge journals in the morning, and it's exactly that, Paul. It's I rolled out of bed, and because I don't check social media and stuff when I get up, I sit down, and sometimes there's just a lot that went on in my head overnight.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I get it all out, and that's exactly what happens. And then I find I'm very focused. By the time I'm done, and what I've been bringing myself back to is to say, okay, so what's the intention for today, and what's the focus? And I'll say, all right, if I get this done and this, it's been a good day. Now, they recommend, and this is funny, for those of you who know me, they recommend handwriting it, and I'm okay with typing it. There's some great apps that synchronize it across your devices. There's some ways to do it. Proper controls, encryption, everything you can have, whatever you want with it. I'm finding for me, I like typing. I don't have to carry a journal with me. It makes it easier. And I'm really pushing to go more and more digital. And it's the one place that you'll hear me just kind of relax and not worry so much about whether or not you're writing by hand or not. If you have one a tablet, I mean, you can write it up by hand on a
Remarkable.
Tablet.
Remarkable is the one that I use. I'm not using it for journaling yet, but now you got me thinking, Michael.
Yeah, it's I'm still trying to I'm eager to see if they get a new iPad and what like the number two pencil looks like. So far, I've had remarkable success. No pun intended there, no play on trademarks. And I've been looking forward to seeing how your experience goes, because I think the remarkable looks truly remarkable. Here's the thing. There's a real benefit, and the more you practice it, the better it gets. A lot of people get stuck. They get blocked. What am I supposed to say? How perfect is it? No, this is for you. This is about dumping your brain out onto paper and letting your brain make sense out of it. It's giving yourself the space of 10 to 15 minutes a day. So one of the things that I found is I actually set up a journal. I call it meditations. That's my daily, every morning, every night. Then I have some stuff where I have personal reflections. I have some stuff where I have business reflections. Then I have some other things based on projects or whatever. And as I have ideas, I just dump the ideas into it. So I might be trying to solve a business problem, and I'll sit down and I'll say, all right, I'm trying to solve XYZ business problem. Here's what's going on. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's my concerns. I swear, Paul, by the time I get that stuff typed, my brain's going in three different directions, and I just sit and type as fast as I can. And then all of a sudden I get to the end and I'm like, oh, that's actually not really the problem that needs to get solved. Or, if we do this step, so it's I highly recommend it. I highly recommend the time for it. Once a day is great. If you have to choose, I'd choose morning. Now, at night, this is a thing I learned about 2 weeks ago, because I was always trying to understand. There's a Marcus Aurelius quote, waste no time arguing what a good man should be one. Woman, whomever, right? Leader. The point was, don't keep arguing about something, do it, right? Favor that bias fraction. But then what I thought was, well, then how do you know if you're doing good or not? That's how. You can review. You can reflect. You can think about those things, and you can do that at the end of your day. You can say, okay, of the things I did today, are there things, and I don't like to start with the negatives. I actually like to start with, is there something I did that I did well, that I need to acknowledge? Did I progress? Did I improve? Did I handle something spectacularly well? And I didn't expect it. Like, what did I learn? And then you move to the second step, and that second step is, okay, where can I do better? And what I've learned, and I'm getting more into the mindset stuff now too, don't try to give yourself a list of 17 things. What can I do better tomorrow? How can I be a better dad, a better leader, a better whatever tomorrow?
Keep it tight.
Yeah. It makes it a lot easier.
So just a mini review on the Remarkable, since we're talking about journaling.
Yeah.
I used it to take notes in all of my meetings, which really helps. At a certain point, I've become really diligent about that, because I leave it connected to my computer during the day, and I take notes right on my desk for every single meeting. I create a new notebook for every single meeting, so it becomes one PDF that I can send as email from my tablet or go on my computer and drag and drop it wherever I want. So that's been working out really, really well. The other thing about Remarkable is it really does, it's the closest thing to running on an actual piece of paper using a real pen as I've ever found. I haven't tried a ton of solutions, but every time I've tried a tablet, I tried a couple different ones writing on it, tried an Android tablet, the iPad tablet with the iPhone pen, my son has one, and a couple of Chromebooks. Remarkable is, in the word, right, it is remarkable how close that is to actually writing on a piece of paper, which I like a lot. So it is, there's some like integration stuff missing. Like, I really want to just be able to say, just sync everything I write into a Google Drive folder, and that option, right. that option doesn't exist. So it creates a lot of interesting scenarios like that for note taking, where it's not as easy to share. That's my one big complaint. My one feature request is if they built in a Google Drive to just say, look, authenticate me to Google Drive and always drop things right in this folder, I would be super happy.
Yeah, that'd be really tight. I keep eyeing that, and that's why I said, like, I'm trying to hedge my bet between how many devices do I carry at once and how does it work?
That's the other thing,
but
too.
I'll tell you, I'm loving this ability to still exercise a hand. And in this article, The Journaling Can Boost Your Leadership Skills, it's got a link to one of the other science studies where they actually show you, when you write by hand versus typing, how different parts of your brain get activated.
Yeah.
And then when you read things like the talent code and you go study how to learn and how to process, and I'm breaking a lot of this down too, to think about how do we read books better and how do we act on that information, right? It's not just learning it and understanding it. It's how do you actually take it from the pages and put it into your life
Yeah.
I'm finding that journaling, but that act of writing by hand, that's really important.
And what
that's
I like cool. about writing by hand versus typing is I can easily just draw arrows between different thoughts and sketch diagrams and charts, you know, more easily when you're writing. I mean, if you're going to put a chart in a document and you got to like, you know, insert all the shapes and all that stuff. Whereas if you're writing, it just kind of flows. You know, I may yep. chart stuff out and graph things out. And that's one of the reasons why I like actually writing.
I do that. And for those of you who do this, I've actually got to the point where I've had clients, people I'm working with say, just send me whatever you just did, send it to me.
Yeah.
It makes so much more sense. Like sure. I couldn't do, I've tried sometimes, Paul, take whatever I sketch out and try to turn it into a PowerPoint, try to turn it into,
yeah.
I'm on a Mac, use OmniGraph or something. And they're like, just send me that thing you did by hand. That was a lot easier. So yeah, no, I
and
think
sometimes
that's a
people point. Don't understand my notes. I don't know if it was you or someone else. If I share my notes, they're like, yeah, we'll have to talk about that. I don't know. It's just the way I write some of my notes or in certain, you know, depending on what I'm note taking on. Right.
I was just going to yeah. say, I could read them crystal clear. It was, yeah. I didn't understand the train of thought
context,
relative
yeah,
to, train of thought, to yeah. where things were. And they're good notes,
sure.
actually. I understood what you're doing. I just didn't know where it was going. All right. Last one. Cause I know we're hitting long in the segment here, but it's why you need to tell them why. Now I just got done picking one that says, don't tell people the organizational changes are coming. Explain why. I threw this one in there specifically to say it doesn't apply to just organizational changes. And this is something I see a lot. Somebody has to make a decision. It's a snap decision. It's a command decision. It's a hybrid, whatever. They got to make the decision. And somebody says, well, why are we doing it that way? Because I said so.
It doesn't
worst
work.
Worst answer ever.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work with your kids. It doesn't work with my
no.
kids.
Yeah. My parents used it with me. Yeah.
Significantly.
My parents used it with me. So I thought like that was it. And I'm like, no, that actually doesn't work at all.
Yeah, no. And so what happens though, so what this says in this article is it says, hey, you got to lay out for people why. Get them involved in the process. And by the way, if you do that, there's a couple benefits. We'll go through those in a second. I just want to point out one other piece to this because, you know, a lot of times I'll put in like the James Clear and the Shane Parrish, he does Farnham Street and a bunch of other people. And we talk about these things of these mental models, right? We did Occam's Razor last show. The idea here is, do you know how you're deciding? And by the way, if you say yes, cool. But I'll tell you what, because I survey a lot of the folks that I work with, and I even the shorter term clients, and I ask people like, how do you decide what's important? How do you decide what's important in your day? How do you resolve conflicts? How do you make some of these basic level decisions? And a lot of times, they're not really sure, and that's okay. We get pretty far without that. But the challenge that I'm starting to find is, a lot of times we'll make a decision, and if you say, well, how did you make that? Why did you make that? I don't know. We didn't pull down all those pieces. And what I've learned in my own life is the decisions that I'm most comfortable with, I followed some semblance of a process, some semblance of a mental model. Here's the thing. If you do that, or if you start to do that, or you pay attention to that, you can then share that with the people around you. Now you can get to the benefits. So just telling them that you made the decision or how you made it doesn't always improve the situation. But if you're actually thinking both about how did I make the decision and what was the outcome, right? We had an article on that as well, where it said, don't judge it based on just the outcome. Look at the process too. Now you can explain that to people. You can explain to them, not just what you did, but the process. And what you just did is an example of it. You know what happens after you keep doing that? They develop those skills too.
Yeah.
Which means you've got better trust and a team now that's going to make better decisions when you're not available to be there. Or now the team understands how to make decisions and you're going to get better information faster.
Right. And that's really
that allows
the goal.
You to make those better yeah. decisions.
And I've been doing that with Wyatt, our software developer, right? Like I'm explaining the requirements, but I also try and make sure I explain why we're proposing and implementing these changes so that if I'm not here and he has a question, if he understands why, he can make decisions on his own. And that's awesome. That's yeah. the goal, right?
Yeah. And then add in that next piece, right? So now Wyatt makes a decision on his own and you don't understand it. If he's just like, well, I don't know. That's what I thought. As opposed to, well, Paul, I looked at this. I pulled from this. I looked at this, right? We wanted to do this. This was the outcome we expected. Here's how we're going to pull it. Oh, okay. Now either you totally get it or you can both look at where either the process could have been better right. or the inputs could have been better. But anyway, that's the way it goes. So hopefully if you listen to these are five articles I'd go read. And I take a look at, and if there was one thing I would do out of this one, it's the journaling. Journaling, 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 and ask yourself these questions. Ask yourself why. Ask yourself if you got better. Explain to yourself how to explain it to other people. Just the journaling alone, you can get the rest of these done the absolute right way. So next week, we got Mike McKee from Observe It. I was wrong last show. I thought he was joining us this show. He's joining us next show. That's going to be a fun conversation. Former NHL hockey player, by the way.
Nice.
In the meantime, you catch me on Twitter at Catalyst. Paul is at Security Weekly. We are responsive on, I may not do a lot of social media, but we're still going to be responsive to you. And you can always find us on LinkedIn. Let us know what you thought of today's show, books you're reading, things you want us to talk about. And remember, exceptional leaders elevate the people around them. So here's to a great week of investing in yourself so that the people around you are better because of it.